Welcome to the Nintendo Fusion Podcast, a podcast that fuses past, present, and future Nintendo thought. I'm David, accompanied by my friend Jordan. Now, Jordan, how many Nintendo fans does it take to change a light bulb?
Well, we don't use a number convention. I'll say you fans.
That's fine, but no one really knows because all the Nintendo fans are too busy playing with the Switch.
Oh, we just sit in the dark.
Yeah, we just sit in the dark, flicking the Switch up and down.
Oh, no. I see the light switch.
Yeah, it's the light switch. Ha ha ha. Anyway, that was kind of a dumb joke, but it's kind of relevant to today's topic. Speaking of Switches, because we're going to give our 2022 year in review. Isn't that right?
Yeah. We at the start of this year, we were pretty high on hopes for 2022. We'll discuss if those hopes came to fruition. I don't think we'll talk too much about 2023 in this episode. It'll just focus on what we thought about 2022, what we kind of wished had happened, and potentially why those things didn't happen. And then talk about our top 10 list of the year, as well as our game of the year.
Yeah, it'll be very exciting, I think. Even though, honestly, there's not, I guess, a ton of games that we really got to pick from this year when it came to Switch releases, considering, like, we were hoping and praying at the beginning of the year that we'd get, like, Donkey Kong and Zelda and Mario and Metroid, and not a single one of those franchises showed up, unless you count, like, Mario Strikers and some of the other party games. But, like, no big, huge titles like we would have hoped to make 2022 the best year since 2017.
Yeah, don't know what we were going on with that. So, like, Zelda makes sense because they said that Zelda was coming out this year.
Right, they basically promised it, and then it didn't happen. Like, oh, whoopsies. Or
I guess they never promised it would come out this year, but we had high hopes considering it was announced, what, in 2019?
Well, and they also gave us a release year for 2022. In 2021, they were like, hey, this is coming out in 2022.
Oh, right. It did get an official delay.
Like, yeah. Then they're like, JK, we need another year. But they did give us a really nice looking trailer. So it was like, okay, I think it'll be worth the wait. But, you know, we're not really here to talk about next year necessarily, even though we are pretty excited for some of that stuff.
Well, I will say another one of the games that we were expecting to come out this year got moved to next year as well, and that's Silk Song.
Right. Yeah, one of the most highly anticipated indie games probably ever.
Yeah, and if we were to go by what they said at E3, it should be out before June, so we haven't seen anything new since then, mind you. And it's supposed to come out in the next 6 months. I'm getting a little nervous.
I saw so many people posting before the Game Awards that are like, what if they just, like, shadow dropped Silk Song after the Game Awards? I'm like, there's no way that's happening.
I don't know. Team Cherry is a bit wild. They shadow dropped most of their DLC, if I remember right.
Yeah, but this is, like, a highly anticipated full release. So I don't think they're going to do that. I think there's going to be some more buildup.
From what, like, I've heard of Team Cherry, is they just work on it till it's done. And then when it's done, they just drop it. They don't. They don't have, so, like, deadlines or anticipation of when things are going to, like, their project management is crazy. I think there was even a quote where they said the only reason why they released Hollow Knight was because they ran out of money. And so they just had to release it.
And I'm glad they did. I love that game. And it would have been crazy if they had just held on to it for another, like, 5 years just to make it absolutely perfect.
Well, and my big concern is they have a lot more money this time. It's going to take a lot longer for them to get to the point where they have to release this game, right?
Very true. So, but anyway, beyond that, I think we thought that there was going to be some sort of Donkey Kong or Mario project. I mean, Donkey Kong had been rumored for probably like 2 years now, I think, by the same team that made, like, the Galaxy games.
There's a big asterisk around that. A lot of people think that the team is capable of working on multiple projects at once, right?
Right.
And so just because it's the same, like, team doesn't mean it's the same director or the same project managers. It could just be like they're utilizing the programmers and artists on both teams for two different projects.
Right. Kind of a shame that we didn't get to see any sign of that at all this year, if it is actually true. I know there are people that still insist that it's something that's coming out. I know that we were also thinking about some sort of Mario game, and I still think the Mario game can hold some water simply because they pushed back the Mario movie. And I'm kind of in the camp that thinks that a lot of the redesigns of characters they're doing for the Mario movie are going to make their way into the video game world somewhat. I don't think they're going to use the exact same models, you know, but I do think that Mario might be getting a real character redesign refresh for the first time since he really went 3D. And I think that that's totally a possibility, and the delay of the movie potentially delayed a Mario game.
I don't know. So like, I still think that when it comes to like their big flagship titles, the art design is supposed to be designed to like kind of go along with the gameplay, right? So whatever like gameplay they have in mind, the art is going to follow suit. Whether it, like, for example, with Skyward Sword, they went with a more pastel-y kind of look, mostly to make it so the fact that the Wii couldn't do as much draw distance, it didn't look so bad, right? It's going to be a blurry game, so we'll make the art style a bit more blurry so it looks artistic and it looks great in the end. There are plenty of other things for gameplay purposes. I don't see Nintendo EAD kind of like locking themselves or putting themselves in a corner creatively just for a Mario movie. Now, I could see the new Super Mario Bros. Line following that logic.
Yeah, that's totally possible. But we also did recently get, you know, Bowser's Fury. So I don't know. It's just so interesting how in our hopes and dreams for 2022, we were like, this year is going to be amazing and all of these games are coming out, and like hardly any of them happened.
Well,
I mean, we had this whole long episode as well early in the year about Metroid Prime 4 and how excited we were for that. And it just nothing.
Well, before we move on from the Mario talk, I do think that Bowser's Fury is a sign that Nintendo EAD is currently in the process of experimenting new ideas for Mario. So we're not just going to get like a Mario Odyssey 2 or anything. And what they ended up with Bowser's Fury wasn't exactly what they wanted to do for a big project, but they were pretty like pleased with what they got. And so they wanted to release it as kind of a small additional thing. But I do think there will be a few elements from Bowser's Fury that will make their way into the next Mario game in some sort of way. Probably a more open world-esque sort of Mario game that might not make it onto the Switch, because as we saw with Bowser's Fury, it really struggled on Switch hardware.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I'm in the camp of believing that the next like flagship 3D Mario game now is going to be held off until the Switch 2, and it will come out within like the first year of the Switch 2. I don't know if it'll be
another Mario Odyssey type situation.
Yeah. It might even be the launch title, just because like the Switch 2 has taken so long to come out. Like they probably have some games already. I think Nintendo learned from the Switch that you need to get some big flagship evergreen titles out quickly in the first year, because they did. Yeah. They didn't have that for the Wii U.
No. The Wii U had a super shaky launch. Even the 3DS had a fairly shaky launch in that regard. And there were some solid titles for the 3DS in the first year, but it wasn't enough to get fans to pull over, you know? Yeah. So the Wii U, definitely not. I think Nintendo Land was like the only big thing for a while.
Well,
honestly don't remember.
Yeah, the Wii U tried to copy the success of the Wii, but Nintendo Land is a much more difficult thing to sell than just sports. Like, it's really easy to sell the concept of sports. And then on top of that, sports just fits so well with the gimmick of the Wii, and the gimmick of the Wii was really easy to sell as well. Whereas what is the gimmick of the Wii U and the naming convention of the Wii U? There was just a lot of like design mess around the launch of the Wii U. There's not like one single issue that caused the failure of the Wii U. There were a lot of issues.
Not only is the Wii U like kind of the successor, it has that gameplay tablet, but you still can use all of your old Wii remotes with it for some reason instead of new controllers. So, I mean, it made sense when people are like, oh, it's literally just a slightly upgraded Wii. Why would I change if I already have everything on the Wii? So
I can already I can already just guess how the like board meetings for the marketing team went with the Wii U, where someone's like, well, we need a new name for a console. And someone says, we cannot drop the Wii name because the Wii name is just worth so much. And someone's like, well, let's do the Wii 2. And someone's like, no, because then people will think that it's like a redundancy of the Wii in some way. So like they would probably just fight on this or whatever and come to the compromise of the Wii U. And it was just like the worst name for video game console ever.
Oh, yeah. So bad. Silly
it,
Nintendo.
It just screams like internal politics, the name.
You know, if they had dropped the Wii name, I think it would have been more successful just well from that standpoint.
And like when we were going into the Wii U, I know we were supposed to be talking about 2022.
But this is relevant. We promise.
When we were going into the Wii U, there was a lot of hype. Like the Wii U sold out on its launch day.
Right.
It's just that when the next shipment came, no one was interested anymore because there was no plans. Like everyone was expecting us to get that Zelda demo that they dropped as like a future game, and Zelda never showed up. The Mario release game was New Super Mario Bros., which I imagine was another like internal politics board meeting thing. Like, well, New Super Mario Bros. Sold way better than Galaxy, so that should be our flagship title. And like, The 2D games for Mario are, well, I don't know, because like Mario Odyssey sold really well. I think the thing mostly is just that the New Super Mario Bros. Game for the Wii was just really easy for casuals to latch onto. But you really need like that initial, like it's a chicken and egg problem where you need games to get an audience so that games can come to your platform. And Nintendo is the one that is responsible for bringing in that initial audience so that other third parties can come and pick up the slack. And they just did not do that with the Wii U. So how this kind of ties back to the Switch 2, Nintendo clearly needs a really strong starting lineup. As we saw with the Switch, they had a strong starting lineup and then kind of like petered out with like gradual support throughout the rest of the lifespan. And the Switch did fine. And I imagine they're going to try and do that same strategy again.
Yeah, yeah. Releasing a few really big, huge games in the meantime. But like, it kind of makes sense why this year ended up being somewhat slower. I mean, there were still some really awesome games from Nintendo as well, as we'll talk about in a minute. But like, these big titles that we were hoping for earlier in the year, you know, we were also kind of hoping that the Switch Pro was going to launch. And so those would have been awesome games to have in the lineup for like a Switch Pro or a console refresh. But now that it seems like the Switch Pro is entirely canceled as we get farther and farther away from the Switch launch, it seems much more likely that we're going to get the Switch 2 or the successor to the Switch, and Nintendo holding back on those games, considering how massive sales still are with all sorts of games like Mario Kart 8, which is now getting all sorts of DLC. Breath of the Wild is still selling really well. They just had the fastest selling Switch games ever with Scarlet and Violet from Pokemon. You know, that they're not or I guess they're not desperate for a huge new game, which is why we didn't get any of the big ones this year. So holding back, getting ready. Hopefully that means we'll get a new console, but I'm not going to be as excited as I was earlier this year about the Switch Pro and say that Switch 2 is coming out in 2023. But anyway, we can talk about our hopes and dreams for 2023 on our next episode.
Yeah, and I will say Nintendo internally probably expected Zelda to come out this year. And I will be surprised,
I'm sure they did,
if internally they also expected Fire Emblem to come out this year, because a January release date for Fire Emblem is a weird release date.
Yeah. January release dates are usually for like some of the bigger titles that just weren't quite ready for holiday. And Fire Emblem is pretty big, but it's not like Mario or something like that.
Yeah. And like Fire Emblem Three Houses released in the summer of its year. So
yeah, yeah.
I don't think January is the best month for Fire Emblem release, but I think that's just where they had to kind of slot it in. I'm kind of surprised they're not holding it off a few months more, because there is a bit of like a lull between Fire Emblem and Breath of the in Tears of the Kingdom. Maybe they just don't want anything anywhere near the release window of Tears of the Kingdom, because they just know it's going to just sell insane amount. Like, it's going to be the flagship game for Nintendo this year. And so I guess next episode we'll talk about whether what that means for a potential like Switch 2 or whatever, because either the Switch 2 is coming with Zelda or it's not coming this year, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yep. But hey, I think that 2022 was a fairly solid year. I think it was better than last year by a long shot.
Yeah, I still think 2022 was a very solid year. It's not the year of S tiers, but it's not the year of B tiers either.
Right. There were some very solid games from Nintendo, and even like some of the games that we technically rate lower, like Pokemon, are mostly lower because of technical issues, not necessarily the gameplay loop itself. And we talked in depth about Pokemon last week, but we'll bring that up a little bit here as we go over some of our games.
Yeah, spoiler, Pokemon did make top 10.
Well, I don't think we played very many Switch games this year.
Yeah, so when we were discussing how to do the top 10 list, we decided to change it up. So in previous years, including like Virtual Boys or whatever, we would all just make like our own top 10 list, and then like each placement it got a point or whatever. This year I figured there's a lot of games where I feel like they're like B tiers, and I don't want them to kind of like shoot up the rankings. So we're trying something new. I have some issues already with this new way we do, but one of the things with having two people is that David and I have very different tastes in games, which makes it very good for discussing a podcast. But coming up with like a combined list of games, my top game is definitely not the game that David had as his top game.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. You know, we laugh and joke. Like, I always say Jordan just absolutely hates JRPGs, JRPGs, and I really like them. So it kind of shows here a little bit, but we'll get to that when we get to it. As part of this, like, you know, potentially if we do this next year, I don't think it counted much for this year, except I guess Monster Hunter, but a major DLC is allowed to count on its own as a game in our listing, right?
Yes. If it is significant amount of DLC where it could have been like a standalone game, I feel like the DLC for Monster Hunter is $40. It's it's the same price as the base game at this point.
Right. So I guess you could say that Splatoon 2's Octo expansion could have also counted.
Yeah, yeah. Considering or how long it is. What was it? The Torna DLC for Xenoblade 2.
Well, the Torna DLC literally is its own game. Oh. Like, yes, you can get it as part of that DLC pack, but they also released it separately as its own cartridge and its own download from the eShop. They're like, yeah, we decided to actually flesh this whole thing out into its own standalone game.
Yeah. So like that level of DLC, not like
Mario Kart tracks.
Yeah, not like Mario Kart tracks.
Cool. All right. Well, you want to give him number 10?
All right. So number 10 was Sonic Frontiers, which was a new departure for the Sonic franchise. I did not play it on the Switch, so I don't know if it has hardware issues on the Switch. But it's enjoyable. I like a lot of the like changes that. Well, so like we've been hearing about Sonic Frontiers and open world Sonic for a while now. And a lot of people were really skeptical of whether or not it could work. And did it work? Kind of. I personally think it was a good like experiment for Sonic. But I think I would prefer going back to more linear design games.
There are just some genres and some series that just really benefit from more linear games. And I do think that Sonic is one of those.
Yeah. Did you end up playing Sonic at all?
No, I watched some reviews and some gameplay stuff. I think it looks really fun. And I think that it's something interesting and fresh. But I just don't really care too much for Sonic. I've never been too good at it. You know, I played through like Sonic Mania when it first came out, but I don't think I ever actually beat the game because I kept dying in one of the levels and I was just like, I'm done with this.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting and fresh, which is something I feel like Sonic needs. But it was definitely lacking in the polish department, but not to the extent like you expect out of Sonic. Like it was definitely better than Sonic Forces, right? Like this is a game that you can sit down and play and have a good time, but it's not going to be like groundbreaking in any way.
That makes sense.
It's not going to be the Breath of the Wild that they were probably hoping for.
Yeah. I heard that some of the story is all right and that the voice acting was pretty fun.
Maybe.
It was at least memeable.
I got really bored with the story and just started skipping all the cutscenes. So
there you go.
I am probably the wrong person to ask about that. But I have.
Okay, well, I'll ask someone else.
I do have friends who did say they enjoyed the story because it was written by a fan favorite comic artist for Sonic.
Cool. So, I mean, I don't have really anything to add to this conversation. Just happy for Sonic fans that they got a decent Sonic game.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often. Cool. Well, then I guess we'll move on to number nine. I don't know why I said number two. It's the second one we're talking about, but we're going in reverse order. Number nine, as we put down on our list this year, we said Kirby and the Forgotten Land. Now, I want you to understand that it's not that we don't think that this game is good or anything like that. It still made our top 10, of course. But I don't know. This game just could not grab my attention long enough for me to want to actually finish it. And I think that that is a fairly large detriment to the game itself. I know there are tons of people out there that absolutely adore this game. They think that the direction is the right way to go for Kirby with this like 3D exploration. And the team did a wonderful job converting Kirby from the 2D to the 3D. And I think that that's really awesome that they went and did that direction. But I just could not convince myself to sit and play through the entire thing. I cleared quite a few stages. I got pretty far, but when push came to shove, I just kind of set the game down and then forgot to pick it up and haven't really felt compelled to since.
Yeah, so I enjoy the game, but it was, once again, it's like a fine experience. I think my biggest issue, so like I appreciate that they took the criticism of like Star Allies. One of the big issues with Star Allies was it just felt so redundant, right? It was just another Kirby game and it wasn't even like doing anything special on that front. This one, they're actually trying to like explore new gameplay loops and expand what Kirby games can be and all that. And I think they did a solid job, but not a stellar job, right? My biggest issue is I feel like it just needed a little bit more, some sort of like depth to it. So like in previous Kirby games, there was a lot more depth to like the move sets of the abilities that you obtain. But in this game specifically, because you have full 360 degree movement, you can't have like all like the joystick button commands for different combos. So they needed something to kind of replace that. And I was kind of hoping that they would have taken something like from Kirby 64, where you had like combinations of powers so that you could have a bit more play with that. But as is, where there's only like one or two ability or moves per ability, it got a bit dull for me pretty quickly. Really repetitive.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy like the arcadey like side content things that they had. Some of those are actually pretty challenging. And I personally was not a huge fan of the gimmick of the body horror cars or whatever. I forgot what they called it, but those abilities just felt really one dimensional, as well as with like what they expected you to do with them. Right. So,
yeah. They were typically like only for a certain chunk of the stage. Right. And it was fairly clear the limitations of the ability. Right.
Yeah. So. I appreciate the game. I appreciate that it's pushing the franchise forward. I think that when Forgotten Land 2 or whatever it's called comes out, it has a lot of room to just be way better than this, though.
Yeah. Again, I'm really proud of Kirby for finally not just sticking with 2D. You know, the only other 3D Kirby game really is Kirby Air Ride, and I don't think that counts.
Yeah. And a lot of people will confusingly say Kirby 64, but that technically was still a 2D game.
Oh, it was definitely a 2D game. It just had the dynamic camera that let you move through 3D environments, but you were definitely confined to a plane of motion. There was no in and out depth except for when you went through, like, I guess, pipes or doors or something to put you into the background of the stage. And I mean, Kirby Robobot and whatever the other 3DS one, they also had that, like, where you could go to the backside of the stage or push forward in 3D technically, but that was still 2D motion. You know, it was not a 3D exploration game. And Kirby has had 3D assets for a while, too. So this is like the first true 3D adventure game for Kirby. And it's cool that they went that direction. I will say, though, like, totally different aside, it looks like a modding community has picked up Kirby Air Ride Jordan and has added online play and leaderboards. And I watched some clips of it, and like, apparently competitive city trials is nuts. So I'm very interested in checking out some more of that in case you were curious.
I'm very surprised that Nintendo has not capitalized on Air Ride. I feel like that's the next Pokemon Snap.
Oh, I think so, too. Like, I think that Kirby Air Ride has such an interesting and dedicated fan base, and they should do something about that. It's like how we finally got a new Strikers game after years, but Kirby Air Ride has been much longer.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, that same kind of category of Pokemon Snap, Strikers, I think it falls into that category where kind of different takes of games that Nintendo doesn't typically make anymore that have a really strong devout following.
Yeah. Speaking of those types of games, where the heck is Rhythm Heaven?
Yeah, that's on there too.
I want a real Rhythm Heaven game on the Switch, Nintendo, please. I love those games. They're so quirky and funny. But anyway, that's a totally different aside, and that can be in like my wild card list for our next episode, I guess. Cool. Well, anyway, Kirby and the Forgotten Land comes in at number 9. Jordan, what's number 8?
All right, so number 8 is a indie game that came out in August called Cult of the Lamb, where you play as a lamb that was supposed to be sacrificed to a cult and get resurrected and create your own cult. It's kind of like a really twisted Animal Crossing, but it's also a roguelike as well. So like you collect supplies and stuff. In your rogue-like dungeons, and then you come back and manage your town of cult followers. It's a really funny game. It's really short, and it's kind of fun. It's pretty fun. It was a pleasant surprise for the year.
Hey, it's on sale on Steam right now for 25% off. Maybe I'll pick it up. I've watched a ton of different creators play through it just randomly during like Twitch streams and stuff. And I think the art style is absolutely lovely. I think the concept of the game is really cool. And like you said, it's very much like Animal Crossing in a lot of ways, where you're like building up your town / cult in this case. And I guess they call it your flock. And you can like sacrifice non-believers and punish people. And it's just very dark humor, but with very cute and interesting graphics. And I definitely think that it deserves to be up here. I believe Switch is like one of their main marketed consoles. I think like actually pulling up their website, the title of their website lists Nintendo Switch as the first console it's available on. So, it definitely fits. And I think that from that indie genre, it works really well as Switch, because Switch is kind of known for being the home of the indies, I think, or at least some of these types of indie games.
And I feel like this game works really well as a portable game. So,
yeah,
that hybrid functionality of the Switch is really nice.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's much else to say about it. I think we kind of covered our bases.
Yeah, it's a fun game. Check it out if you want to. Going into number 7 is
Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. We did come to a decision on which Pokemon game was the best Pokemon game of the year.
Yeah, apparently. Now, I'd say that Scarlet and Violet, kind of like we alluded to earlier, is only this low and the other Pokemon game is higher because the performance issues are just so glaringly awful. I mean, it just takes away so much of the fun of the game that, you know, there are lots of weird and hard things about it. I also kind of wanted to point out, you know, we did like a whole hour and 40 minute episode on this literally last week, so I won't spend too much time on talking about these games. But one of the things that I found really fascinating about the direction for a lot of the grindy and repetitive tasks like shiny hunting and egg breeding and raiding basically require you to have an online subscription or to have a bunch of local friends that you can raid with, because some of the features that we've had for the longest time were just baked into the game, and now you need Herba Mystica in order to make sandwiches to increase your chances and increase things. Like, I we used to have the oval charm for eggs that would increase the rate of eggs significantly. That's gone. And now you have to make an egg power sandwich or eat an egg power meal somewhere. Shiny hunting, we still have the shiny charm. So I'm not really going to include that one. But then there's also like the encounter powers. The encounter powers, you used to be able to increase your different spawns by having certain abilities like magnet pull and flash fire and a couple of others. And now if you want to increase your fire type spawns, you have to make a sandwich. And if you want the absolute best spawns, you have to get the Herba Mystica. And the only way to get Herba Mystica is to play online. And in my eyes, forcing people to do this online mechanic in Pokemon where it used to be 100% entirely, well, not 100%, but like being able to do a lot of things without needing to have friends or go online, honestly really detracts from, I think, the spirit of being able to grind and play Pokemon yourself. I don't know if you had thought about that.
No, I didn't think about that. It yeah. is interesting that they are trying to push for more online play. I wonder if that might be from Nintendo themselves trying to push the Nintendo Switch online a bit more.
Probably.
For their games. Or it might just be completely coincidental.
Yeah, but it feels really bad to have to go online to get Herba Mystica to make the best of the best sandwiches. And the other problem is that the sandwiches only last 30 minutes and you have to like push a different button to pull up the timer. And if you're doing eggs, you can't see that timer unless you exit the picnic. Like, it's just honestly some weird decisions regarding that. Like, oh, if I want to shiny hunt, I can only do it in 30 minute chunks of time, like for the different sandwich powers. I just think that it's kind of silly and it's definitely pushing.
Yeah,
more
the
for
user
that
interface
play.
In this game is kind of all over the place. I kind of feel like there just were a lot of cooks in the kitchen with the project planning of it all with yeah. a lot of interests that just didn't work out the way everyone intended it to in the end.
Yeah, for sure. But on some good notes, you know, we harped on some of the bad stuff. Good notes, the Paldea region is really cool. The open worldness really does work for Pokemon. I think that there are some really solid Pokemon designs introduced this generation. I know a lot of people have found their new favorite Pokemon. I know that a lot of people have found their new favorite Pokemon when it comes to Scarlet and Violet. And I think there's a lot of really great stuff. Competitive is going to be really interesting with the Terra stuff. It's just the games could have been made so much better and they really needed another year in development.
Yeah, another year, or they really just need to get a grasp on project planning.
Yeah. Game Freak. Anyway,
at this point, I don't know how much a year would have actually helped them just because there's so much like so many issues that clearly came up in the project planning process. and like with development, when you want to fix problems as early in the process as possible, because the later it gets, it just dramatically gets more expensive to fix.
Yeah. I don't think we're ever going to get a patch that really fixes the frame rate. No. Like, I'm sorry, fans, it's not going to happen. Even if they are aware of it, and Nintendo made that statement a few weeks ago, like, we are aware of performance issues in Scarlet and Violet. It's like, you're aware of them, but you're never going to fix them all. There's no way.
Yeah, so I wonder if we're going to hopefully go into a four-year cycle for generations now.
Please.
But I suspect not. I suspect we're going to get DLC next year, and then the year after that, we'll get some sort of side project, and then the year after that is Gen 10.
gotta keep those new monsters coming out of the factory constantly. That's how it works.
I feel like they really need to do some sort of like mid-gen release so that they could still have new Pokemon or whatever, so that the trading card game and the merchandising still works, but they don't need yeah. to do like a full-on region every 3 years and have a bit, like for their flagship games, a bit more spacing out.
I think that would work really well. I mean, Arceus introduced a handful of new Pokemon and new forms.
Yeah.
So they could do that pretty constantly, I think, like fairly consistently. Plus, I know there are so many people out there that are begging Game Freak or the Pokemon Company to either remake or give us a new entry in like the Colosseum series, simply because people want to be able to play double battles the entire yes. game.
Oh man. I don't understand Game Freak's position on double battles, because Game Freak clearly loves double battles. That's how they want all their competitive battles to be. But then in the like the main game, they just pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And I think that they could create new smaller regions like the Ore region from the Colosseum and XD games more often.
Like I said last episode, I would really like for them to just do a new region in the old 2D style. Like we get 2D Zelda and 2D Metroid in parallel with the 3D games. Why can't we have that with Pokemon?
Because Pokemon needs to go bigger and better all the time.
I think we've gotten to the point with Pokemon there's enough nostalgia with the fans that they can pull off just having the two exist in parallel. And they've gotten so different from each other that, yeah. Like,
oh, there are so many fans that are like, I would play more Pokemon if they went back to some sort of 2D art style.
Yeah, and it would have to be pixel art, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe even hand-drawn. Like, if we got a hand-drawn watercolor Pokemon game in traditional Ken Sugimori art style.
That'd be beautiful.
Yeah. They could definitely play around with things. And it doesn't have to be as long as, like, a 3D game, right? Like, they could make just a 20-hour Pokemon adventure instead of a 40-hour, but...
They totally could, but they may never do that.
Basically, we're saying be a bit more experimental, Game Freak. So speaking of experimental with Game Freak, though, moving on to number 6 was Pokemon Legends Arceus.
Yeah.
Which is the rare...
Beat out Scarlet and Violet.
Which is the rare case of Game Freak actually being a bit experimental.
And being pretty successful with their experimentation.
Yeah. It was better than their flagship game this year.
I know, right? The only thing it didn't really have was a good competitive format, and it strayed from traditional battling, which is why I know there are a lot of people that prefer Scarlet and Violet. But Legends Arceus like kept pulling me back. It made me want to explore more. I really enjoyed like shiny hunting and hunting mass outbreaks. It was really cool to see how the Pokemon interacted with the world around them, how spawns would change at night, how there were still like regional areas. The Pokédex missions were actually really fun for me to complete. I haven't 100%ed the decks, of course, but you know, I've gotten everything to at least level 10. And I don't know, it just felt like a Pokemon game that was designed to just explore, have fun, do what you want in the area, and then just, I don't know, have fun.
Yeah. For the next Pokemon game, I really want them to take a lot of ideas from Arceus. The world felt a bit more interesting to explore than it did in Paldea, I'll say.
Yeah.
The map design in Paldea was a bit more bland than it was in Arceus.
Well, and I mean, the Hisui region was based off of the Sinnoh region. So there was a lot of really great variety, because Sinnoh is honestly one of the more varied regions in the game or in the series. And it was just also really cool to see ancestors of the individual characters be able to kind of see these more old style villages around the area, and then like imagine how the region eventually transformed into real Sinnoh. And I thought that was such a cool way to explore Sinnoh for the Pokemon anniversary. Like, I really love Arceus. It's kind of crazy how much I actually really grew to love the game.
Yeah, and we were pretty down on it going into it, so it was a pleasant surprise when it actually worked out.
Yeah.
There's definitely some technical issues with the game, but it...
Not as bad as Scarlet and Violet. Yeah.
But it was still a very fun experience, and the rare like chance for Game Freak to be a bit more creative with Pokemon as a franchise. I'm kind of concerned that it might eventually be forgotten to the wayside, sort of like the Pokemon Ranger series ended up. Because Pokemon Rangers was also pretty popular when it came out, but it's now relegated to just the fact YouTube channels of like, did you know this game existed back 10 years ago?
I mean, they did re-release Blue Mystery Dungeon a couple of years ago.
Sure.
But that doesn't really count, I don't think. And I don't know if it got the sales that they wanted to warrant making more or remaking more, but whatever. I just hope that Legends Arceus doesn't go that route. I hope that they make either more Legends games or more games in the style of Legends.
So I don't think I need a Legends 2, to be honest. I just want them to take what worked with Legends and put it into the main games.
I think that'd be cool. But I would really like to explore some of the ancient history of other regions. I think that Unova would be a great pick. So would Johto. And I wouldn't say Hoenn because we kind of got their whole story because it just happened again.
Hoenn's hard to do without space.
True. I think Galar would also be a really cool region to go to the past in because Sword and Shield just really didn't explore the region at all. So might be cool to see some ancient medieval stuff from Galar. Kalos would also work really well in that regard. But, you know, if they don't do it, fine, as long as they take some of the gameplay mechanics and design choices going forward.
All right. So now moving into the top five games. There was another indie game that I really liked this year. There was quite a few indie games actually this year that were pretty nice. And for the Switch being the home of indies, it's definitely fitting for a bunch of them to end up on this list. Have you heard of the game Tunic?
Yeah. I've actually seen a lot of really great stuff about it. And I think you brought it up not too long ago.
Yeah, I really like Tunic. I think it's a very, very fun idea. The main concept of it is like, what it's trying to recapture the feel of playing Zelda games back on the NES or whatever, right? As a kid, right?
Yeah.
So because you're a kid, you can't read or anything. So all of, like, the signs are gibberish. You're slowly like you're just thrown into the world with no tutorial on what anything does. And as you traverse through the world, you'll slowly pick up pages to the manual of the game. But since you're a kid, you can't really read. So the manual is still like written in like gibberish or whatever. And so you have to like discern from like the pictures drawn on the manual and stuff to like solve how like the function or the mechanics of the game work or figure out secrets and all that stuff. Kind of like how we did back when we were children.
Yeah. That really does feel like how I first played The Legend of Zelda. Just not knowing anything and then not having any helpful guides. Just like, oh, yeah, this exists. Yeah, oh, that's so cool. I have been super interested in wanting to play it. I've seen some gameplay, of course, and you talking about it. And I think that it definitely deserves to be up here on our top 10 list. Just from the vibes that I get from it.
Yeah. It was, I believe, a console exclusive for the Xbox. I will admit, I played it on PC, not on a Switch. So I don't know how it works, like, from a technical perspective. But I don't think it's a demanding game, so it should be fine, right? Like, yeah. The game itself, though, is just so charming. It is kind of difficult. It does have a bunch of Souls-like elements to it as well. And it's got a lot of classic 2D Zelda mechanics. Like, if you're a Nintendo fan and you like 2D Zelda, like, this is a must get, in my opinion.
Okay, well then it is a must get for me. I'll go order it, I guess, and play it. That's cool. So yeah, that's Tunic at number five.
Yeah.
All right.
And so number four is our only DLC on the list. It is Monster Hunter Sunbreak. So Monster Hunter has gotten into this trend with their games now, where they release a major DLC update where it's basically another Monster Hunter game tied to the previous Monster Hunter. Think of it kind of like a sequel to Monster Hunter Rise, but you get to move your character over from the previous game to it. And this is a really good Monster Hunter game. They added a bunch of new tools for all of like the main equipment. I am playing a lot of Insect Glaive right now, because they added some insect powders that are really fun and just allow you to basically strategize more interesting ways to take down monsters with the insect blade. And they added a bunch of movement options and new moves and stuff. There's a lot more customization. They make a lot of the grinding easier to kind of just not have to grind for anymore. And did I mention that the new monsters are really cool? I really like the new dragon because it turns Monster Hunter into Bloodborne.
That's cool. Now, you've told me many, many, many times that I would really like Monster Hunter, and I believe you. I just never sit down to play it.
So I would say Monster Hunter Rise is the game to get into Monster Hunter with. it's the most approachable game. It's the least grindy game. It is the game that decided to make like getting into fights and out of fights just the quickest as possible. Like in this game, you are just jumping into fights over and over and over again. And there's not a lot in the way of like slowing things down like there are in previous Monster Hunter games. And some people really like the more slower approach of the older Monster Hunters because they like the thematic feel to it all. And now they feel like these new Monster Hunter games are feeling a bit too gamey. But if you're getting into Monster Hunter, I think that's kind of what you want before you start going to these older games. Because back in like Monster Hunter Tri Ultimate, it was really hard for me to convince some of my friends to play the game because it took like, I don't even know, like 5 hours to get to like the first real fight or something. It was definitely taking a page out of the JRPG book before it got like really good back in the day.
Well, that's good to hear. Maybe one day I'll play Monster Hunter. You're just gonna have to like yell at me about it or something.
Yeah, it's also on Steam if you don't want to play it on Switch, but it works pretty.
I mean, it is the Steam Winter Sale right now, yeah. So maybe I'll take a quick look.
But it does run really well on Switch. I have now put in, geez, probably 300 hours into Monster Hunter Rise at this point.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just like a really good multiplayer game. Like I still play it pretty consistently with friends. I'm excited to see what comes out of the Monster Hunter franchise going forward. I think Capcom is really nailing it with these last few releases.
Yeah, that's cool to hear. Capcom's been doing a pretty good job all around, I think. So hopefully Monster Hunter continues to impress you, Jordan. I know you are a very hard fan to please. Just kidding. Cool. All right. And then what's number three?
All right. So number three. This is just like the a bunch of games that
the Jordan corner.
Yeah, the Jordan corner. This was another indie game. It originally came out as a PS5 console exclusive and then snuck onto the Switch at the end of this year. It is Sifu. And this game, I am very surprised, is not at the top of like more game of the year lists than it is. It is, in my opinion, the best beat 'em up game ever made.
Okay.
Like, oh man, I don't even know like where to begin with talking about this game. So the main thing with this game is it's a kung fu game where it's like following a lot of the like story tropes of like a kung fu movie or whatever. And it really tries to make you feel like you're in a kung fu movie, even with like opening credits and all that stuff. And the mechanics just feel so solid and quick and fluid, and just there's a lot of weight to the combat. The main gimmick or whatever is that when you die, you gain years in life or whatever and then revive. So like if you're 20 years old when you die, you come back as like a 21 year old or whatever. And if you die consistently, that aging process picks up faster, right?
Okay.
And as you get older, you gain more kung fu techniques, so your move pool increases, but your health decreases. So it like simultaneously gets harder and easier in different areas or whatever. So as you become more of a feeble man, like you're kind of a glass cannon at that point because you're a master of kung fu.
That is a way cool mechanic. And see, I just pulled up the game's listing on Steam to like kind of read the summary. This looks super cool.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, it is an absolute blast to play. And then like whenever you pass through a level, whatever age you're at the end of the level, that's where you're at going into the next level. However, you can go and redo levels, try and like get a better score or whatever, so that you have more age or more lifespan or whatever to go into the next level. And yeah, it's just a really, really fun game. I will say that like the very beginning of the game is one of the best like tutorial sequences I've seen in a video game, because like, how do I even describe this? So basically after like the main introduction sequence happens and like you get like the core like story of like what this game is, it then immediately goes into this like opening credits section where it's teaching you like the mechanics of the games or whatever, like any tutorial would. And what it is you are practicing against the like people that you're trying to get revenge on. So it's not only teaching you the mechanics of the game, it's also teaching you the weaknesses to each of these bosses that you'll face later on as you are like training to fight them, right? And so it's just like this perfect blend of like telling a story through game mechanics and also like just doing this beautiful quick tutorial to also get you up to speed on how to play the game.
That's so cool. I might have to give that one a try too. You're just giving me more games to add to my list, like basically. Cool. Yeah, no, this definitely sounds really, really cool. It's a shame it's not on Steam yet, but I might just have to get it on my Switch then because I don't have a PlayStation 5.
Well, it is on Epic Games.
So, oh, it's on Epic?
Yeah. All right. So you can get it on Epic or on Switch. I did not play it on Switch. However, before coming into this, I did like read and watch a bunch of reviews just to make sure before I like recommend this game. Apparently runs fine on Switch.
Good.
Which I was kind of surprised about because the trailer looked really rough, I will say.
Well, okay.
But I think that was just because like Nintendo streaming the directs or whatever, they have like bad like compression and bitrate and all that stuff when they stream the game. So watching it live just didn't look as great as it should because it's supposed to be a pretty quick moving game, and streaming quick moving games through the direct typically has not turned out well for first impressions.
Nope, definitely not. I know there are a lot of people that are like, don't forget guys, it's the YouTube compression algorithm that makes these games look really, really, really bad. Like, okay, yeah, that's true, but Scarlet and Violet still looked bad. So
yeah. But apparently, so it still doesn't run as well as it does on PC. Shocker, I know. But I've heard that the Switch version still runs pretty smooth and
awesome.
Very well.
Now we're entering my tiny corner of our top 10 list. For number two, we put down Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And I love this game very, very, very much. Did a very long podcast episode with a special guest, James, who used to do podcasting with us, but has since moved on to his own projects. Jordan has not played Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So it's up to me to do this game justice. The game is beautiful. There are definitely some graphical issues, and there are times when it looks pretty muddy because, you know, we're on the Switch, and a big, ambitious game like this can still look not so great at times, but the gameplay loop is great. The combat is the best Xenoblade combat has ever been, though technically I personally prefer the system in Xenoblade 2 because that one just felt even more busted to me in a lot of ways. But it feels really fun to defeat these monsters. The story is absolutely incredible. The characters are really lovable and engaging and really grow on you. The story, like I already said, is pretty interesting and is really great for those of you that have played Xenoblade 1 and 2. And I don't know, I just highly recommend this game if you like JRPGs. I don't know if I would recommend playing this game first, but the good news is that the entire Xenoblade Chronicles, not Xenoblade X, but Xenoblade Chronicles series is on the Nintendo Switch. So I'd say go play Xenoblade 1 or 2. You don't have to play 2 to understand 1, and you don't have to play 1 to understand 2 completely. But you do need to play both to better appreciate 3, I think. Though you can, I guess, play it without it. Either way, really solid game. Really loved it. Glad that Monolith made it. It was honestly a surprise when they announced it. So, yeah, I think it deserves to be here.
And it is the only game on this list that made it to the Keeley Game of the Year. nominations, right? So
yeah, so it's good enough that some people wanted it to win Game of the Year. I still wish it won music, but whatever, I'm not gonna fight about that. I'm not gonna argue about it here.
What did win music? It was God of War.
Yeah, it was God of War.
That should have gone to Elden Ring.
Could have. I know a lot of people that are like, God of War was all right, but Elden Ring and Xenoblade had better music.
God of War had one banger soundtrack that is absolutely phenomenal, or one song that was absolutely phenomenal, and I think that song could probably carried it.
Yeah, probably. Whatever. I'm not bitter. Wink, wink. Anyway, so that's number two, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And then our game of the year, I guess, our number one is Splatoon 3. Yeah.
I mean, it's, I am pretty happy with where Splatoon kind of ended up with here. So at the beginning of the year, I was pretty down on Splatoon 3 because I just didn't see what warranted a sequel to Splatoon 2. It looked like it was basically just the same game again. And to be fair, it kind of is. But
okay, yeah, I agree.
But the single player obviously is very different. But it's the previous game designed in a way that isn't dumb.
Yeah, menuing is way better. The scheduling, especially for Salmon Run, is way better. The way to be able to queue up with your friends is way better. The ranked modes are actually way better and way better thought out when it comes to like scoring and how there are three different queues for ranked modes now, which is amazing. Like you can play the series games where if you really want to go for points and rank up, you play those ones. But if you want a more casual experience but hate turf wars, you can play the open queue. And then if you're super sweaty, just kidding, if you're really good at the game, you can queue up for X rank battles. And those are way more intense and are usually way better players. So there's just a lot more for people to enjoy. Some of the matchmaking is still pretty broken, and I felt really bad on Christmas Day. There were memes going all over where it showed like entire teams of new players on one like team versus a bunch of veteran players, and they just got absolutely demolished. And I just felt so bad for the new players that was their first experience with Splatoon 3. And it's like, come on, Nintendo, fix the matchmaking, at least for Turf Wars. We know that there is an internal score for how good you are at the game generally, like an internal like MMR type thing. Why doesn't Turf War use those? I'll never know. But beyond all of that, I think the game is incredibly solid. I think if they patch some of the other remaining communication issues, it'll just go down as probably the best Splatoon game in the series when it comes to the online play, for sure. I know people are still mixed on where the single player campaigns line up. I still believe that Octo Expansion is better than Alterna, or I guess Return of the Mammalians is what this one's called, but still really solid single player campaign. And there's a lot in Splatoon for pretty much everyone to enjoy.
Yeah, I think the thing I like most about this game is it's not forcing your hand in how to play the game. It just allows you to play how you want to play. If you want to do Salmon Run, it's actually available now. Like,
well, and the Salmon Run like rotations have been really solid. Like I've been grinding Salmon Run a lot lately. It's so fun. Just a lot of the new bosses, the great maps. I mean, it's just good. And it's so good that it's on all the time. The only problem with Salmon Run is that Spawning Grounds is the worst map from Splatoon 2. And I can't believe that they chose that one. I hate that map. It's got a whole bunch of the like grates. So when it's high tide, the map is still really big, but you can't swim to some of the spawning areas. So it's like, what's the point? It's like, you're going to die if you walk over there during high tide. But anyway, I still love Salmon Run very, very, very much.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can play it at any time, which is basically all you ever wanted for Splatoon.
I gave a list of demands and they met those demands. So,
yeah.
So Splatoon 3 is just a Splatoon game I always wanted. And now that we finally have Splatoon at the state where I want it, Splatoon 4 is going to have to actually add something new. But I really enjoyed my time with Splatoon 3. It's a really fun multiplayer shooter on the Switch, and it's very unique to Nintendo. Game of the year.
Yeah. Game of the year. So again, I guess I'll go through the list just so that you've got it. Number 10, Sonic Frontiers. Number 9, Kirby and the Forgotten Land. Number 8, Cult of the Lamb. Number 7, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Number 6, Pokemon Legends Arceus. Number 5, Tunic. Number 4, Monster Hunter Sunbreak. Number 3, Sifu. Number 2, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And number 1, our game of the year, Splatoon 3. Congratulations and applause, applause, applause.
Yeah. And so like we said at the beginning of this podcast, I do feel like this is a pretty solid year. It's not 2017.
No. I don't think we're going to get a 2017 until we get the Switch 2. Because yeah, it really does feel like Nintendo's going to open all of the gates for the Switch successor, but still solid year for sure.
So yeah, I of course wish that we got Metroid and Zelda this year, and potentially Donkey Kong or Mario, but or we'll talk about 2023 next episode.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. That'll be our first episode recorded in 2023, and it'll be a good way to herald in the new year. But again, as a whole, we think this was a really solid year. I'm personally really glad that we said that Splatoon 3 was game of the year. I still play it nearly every single day because I am a creature of habit when it comes to these types of shooter games. Splatoon basically replaced Overwatch for me, and I'm really glad it did because I think it's the better game for how I like to play.
I mean, Overwatch 2 came out this year and that didn't make it to the list.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I honestly, I'd say Overwatch 2 is kind of C tier, especially given how rocky of a launch it had and how aggressive its monetization is. But I don't want to sour our podcast with discussion about Overwatch.
Oh, also, I do want to say there were a few games that David and I both really wanted to play this year, but just weren't able to get around to because we're busy people.
In case you were wondering where these ones were.
Yeah. Like, I personally was pretty interested in playing Mario & Rabbids 2. I did get the game. I have it downloaded. I just haven't had the time to actually play it. I actually got it as a gift from a friend that works at Ubisoft. He got it for you.
Oh, cool.
But
well, there you go.
So I do intend to play that one.
Cool. And I really want to play Bayonetta. I actually got it for Christmas, so I will probably play it pretty soon. Bayonetta 3, that is. So. Yeah.
And I feel like there was one more. Oh, yeah. Triangle Strategy.
Oh, yeah. I think I bought that one.
Yeah, I bought it, too. It's on my shelf. I'll get to it.
Yeah, same.
Hopefully I get to it before Octopath Traveler 2, but it's probably not going to be the case. I'll
yeah. Oh, well. But other than that, it's been a pretty solid year, and that's pretty much all I have to say. Looking forward to our next episode where we can talk about what we're hoping for the future. And hopefully we're a bit more tame when it comes to our expectations.
I definitely feel like yeah, I'm going to be more tame.
Yeah, I'm not expecting anything except what they've actually told us, and I'll have a little wish list, but it's not going to be like, yeah, we're getting the Switch Pro this year.
Yeah, like next year is still looking pretty solid. If Pikmin and Silksong come out, we'll have a pretty good year, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And if they give us the Splatoon 3 DLC, then that's definitely going to be on my list, but that might be a year later.
And also Pokemon DLC. Like, there's plenty of stuff to talk about that.
It's kind of the year of DLC from what I understand so far. But again, we'll talk about that next week. Other than that, Jordan, is there anything else we need to tell our wonderful listeners?
I think I'm good.
Great. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Nintendo Fusion podcast. We sure do appreciate you listening to us. If you liked the show, please be sure to give us a review or a comment or a like, depending on what platform you're on. Doing that will help us grow as a show so we can reach more people's ears. You can also join our Discord server by heading to nintendofusion.com/discord, and you can talk about Nintendo stuff with us. But other than that, I think that's all we have. So thanks again for listening to this episode of the Nintendo Fusion podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
See ya.